you watch Saltburn? This is so random.
I did.
Did you like it?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
What do you mean?
I have no idea. It absolutely had my attention. But yeah. Then there were a few moments where I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, I think everybody felt that way.
Welcome to the podcast. Today I have my childhood friend Allegra on, and we've been friends forever. Like, I think like middle school was like our official.
Yeah, probably like at least 17 years shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real long time. And I think like when I think back at some of my more fun and interesting stories from being in like middle school and in high school, like you were definitely like in all of them. Like I think we did our, like you were with me for my most fun stuff.
Good.
Yeah. And like, and we also, me through you had gotten into like the emo kid stuff and like all of that stuff was very much like you started it. And then I was like,
I'm glad your parents let you hang out with me.
Oh yeah. That was a whole thing when we were young, that there were parents who were very nervous about you, which is funny because you're now a literal doctor.
That's true.
Dr. Nevin.
That is true. That's true.
How does it feel to have that much of a story arc?
Okay, so the thing is that was always my goal. I was always going to be some kind of doctor, and I have always been someone that, like, accomplishes my goals, no matter, like, what it takes. So I'm not necessarily surprised, but if you were to ask, like, certain people's parents in middle school, if they were surprised, they would have thought that I would be, like, dead in a ditch somewhere.
Right, which is so funny because, in reality, you were a great student. You actually were very responsible, too. Like, I think, as far as I knew, I think like I lied to my parents more than you ever did. And I didn't, neither of us were doing anything crazy, actually. Like, when I think about people who were in their like formative years and actually getting into trouble, like doing like drugs and shit, like we never did any of that.
No, of course not.
Like, we were literally like hanging out in public places, loitering.
We loved a good loitering session.
And drink Monsters at 8 p.m., which is shocking to me even now, and listen to some pop punk or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was, like, pretty much it. And, like, go to Hot Topic and, like, I never stole anything from Hot Topic, but we had friends that did.
We had friends that stole
on our behalf.
Yes, like at this Foster's Home for Imagine.
Yeah. Why was it always Foster's Home for Imagine?
I don't know. Maybe that they had the least security.
I don't know. They were like, no one wants it.
Yeah, I didn't really use that pony purse that I got.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. She was on it.
Do you think she just went for Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends things? Like
maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. That's so funny. Anyway. But yeah, like it was, and I think like those like years also were so important to me because it gave like, when I think back at like what I was like in middle school, especially, and I guess like the end of elementary school, I felt like I was meant to do more and like meant to like be more interesting than I was. And you just like embodied that. So I was like, that's it.
Oh, thank you.
and then like, as we got older too, it was like you have always been a friend where like, I never felt judged by anything that I ever said to you. So like, I could tell you anything and everything that was like things that were happening where I was like, ugh. This is, yikes. This was not my best choice. This was certainly not my best choice. But I always felt like I could tell you because even if you were like, okay. I never felt like judged by any of the things that I was doing. And now it makes sense that you are now a psychologist and a doctor and are able to actually do this in like a clinical environment. Because I think you always kind of had that little kernel in you your whole life where you were just never judgmental and just kind of like accepted what people were saying. It's actually kind of crazy now that I think about it. You just naturally are like that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I always kind of like valued authenticity. So people make dumb decisions all the time. Mm-hmm. They make them for a reason.
Yeah. Like,
it's about understanding why and then doing better in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy that you had that perspective always. Like, do you ever think about like why that, how you got to that?
What, like the important, like what?
Like how, like, can you, if you like reflect on how you, like, maybe more of your formative years, I guess like how you were raised. But that feels like a very pointed question, but it does. But like, when you think about like how, like what your upbringing was like what made you the type of person where someone would do something and you would be like, well, but there's a reason why you did it that way.
I think that I was surrounded by irrationality and I had to put some kind of logic to it. And then okay. I realized that even if people have incredibly irrational thought processes and do things that are ridiculous, yes, talking about formative years, unfortunately, some of the people that I was around didn't always handle their emotions or anything in the best way. So I kind of had to like bend to try to understand and sympathize.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm excusing any kind of like misbehavior, but I can understand where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of the belief that like people are doing the best that they can in that moment. They can always do better, but like they are loving to the capacity that they can. They are empathetic to the capacity that they can be. And people have shortcomings.
Yeah. And that's like such a beautiful way to think about people. And I agree so much. And that's also a really nice way to think about other people because it allows you the freedom from feeling like any part of their choices, first of all, have anything to do with you, because they almost never do.
Yeah.
And like, and especially when their choices feel really rational, like it probably didn't have anything to do with you actually at all. And it also allows you to kind of like take a step back and be able to be like, okay, like this, when I can give reasons for why people make the choices that they do, I don't have to feel so emotionally charged by everything.
Right. Absolutely.
And that space is, I feel like that space alone is the difference between the way that I handled things emotionally in my 20s and the way that like I do now, late 20s now to being 30. Like being able to be like, okay, like if I take a step back, I know that this is not really about what I think it is and you know, whatever. And now would you say that you specialize in addiction?
Like,
is that
I do. Yes. So I've been working primarily with substance use since about 2019.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I remember when you started doing all that kind of work and you were working in like prisons and like and if you don't know what Allegra looks like, she's like beautiful and small. And so like for you to be like working in like
acute psychiatric distress.
Yes. Acute psychiatric distress. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. It was one of those moments where it's like, if it were your kid, you'd be like, I don't know about that. But that was like an active choice that you made to work with people who were potentially dangerous and also like had really like acute disorders. Why was that your choice? I mean, knowing you as long as I have, I feel like you've always been very like, if it's a challenge and I know I can do it, I'm going to. Like,
yeah.
I simply am going to. And so I feel like some of it, like when I look at it, I'm like, well, she did it because she knew she could. And then you did.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely like part of it. I mean, I know that like everyone's, you know, kind of into true crime like at this point, but I've always just been kind of like fascinated by people who make like decisions to like harm other people or, you know, like whatever they're doing to like wind up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But like when it comes down to it, they are still people.
Yeah.
And so like similarly to like some of the things that I was just talking about, like irrationality, there's some kind of reason, even if it's not grounded in reality. And so I think a lot of times, like people in the prison system, with people who struggle with addiction, there's like a whole lot of stigma and judgment, and it's all viewed as like a moral failure.
Yeah.
And like, P.S., I'm not condoning murder or anything like that here, but they have needs,
yeah,
you know? And honestly, like I have never really felt in danger.
Yeah.
And that's been like pretty cool. So I can work with a lot of like really angry men,
yeah,
but not feel like they're gonna harm me.
Yeah, I like that you phrase it as like it feels like a moral failure because like obviously we talk a lot about like sex and relationships and stuff like that, and there's so much morality tied to people's sexuality, and the places where I see morality tied to where like it's just, I mean, there's many. But places where I feel like it's especially bizarre is in sexuality and in like money related things. People have like a lot of moral value tied to the way that they handle their money, which is interesting. But it's interesting to also tie it to like potentially harmful things that people are doing. Because I think that you're right. There's a part of it, obviously, like if you're hurting other people, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Like you're morally, you're wrong. But their intention behind doing it and the morality behind their intention is like a completely different thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that has to be really interesting to actually like give those people the space to be like, okay, like I actually would like to dig into the reason why.
Yeah, absolutely.
What has that experience been like for you?
It's definitely been really, really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. I've met a lot of really cool people who have done some awful things.
Yeah.
Which is like a really, it's kind of hard also to reconcile as like a therapist, like, oh, this dude killed like 5 people, but he's like my favorite fucking patient. Like, that's weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of people act out of hurt.
Mm.
And Freud had this term called like identifying with the aggressor. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of people who have been abused or neglected in one way, and they don't know how to tolerate it. They don't know how to... like manage it. And so then they end up becoming an aggressor themselves.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And that is really sad. But if someone had intervened and done, you know, some kind of trauma processing, who knows if that person would have done what they did.
Yeah. And I think we talked literally at dinner earlier about watching, about how we process relationships as they've been modeled to us. And so I think if your entire life has been surrounded by violent relationships and like that's the model that you've seen and like that's the way that you interpret conflict resolution, how are you supposed to know? Even like I grew up in a home where it was not violent conflict resolution, but it was, you know, it was not maybe like the perfect model. And even so, like I as an adult have had to work at what conflict resolution looks like for me in a healthy, balanced way. So if you're growing up in a place where the first instinct is violence, I can't imagine how you're supposed to then. It's frustrating, I'm sure, because I mean it's frustrating for me to even think about how people would tie so much moral value to people who make choices like that when in reality they were doing the best they could with the tools that they had.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like it's sad. Like it's unfortunate that those were the tools that they were given. But then for you to say like you fucked up, it's like, well that's literally all they possibly that's all that they knew potentially.
Absolutely.
So I mean it's nice that that's the approach now that you are able to take with them. It's like, this is a safe place and we're gonna unpack it.
No, absolutely. I mean like when like babies aren't handed like a roadmap as to how like the world works and how relationships work, you learn everything based off of like your first kinds of experiences. Mm-hmm. If you're raised in a high conflict environment, that is what is telling you like how relationships function, how you should view yourselves, how you should view other people, how you should view like the world at large.
Yeah.
That is the only model that you have that is going to be default.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. And it's so sad, actually. And I'm happy that these people have people to actually speak to, like yourself, to be able to actually unravel some of that. Like, if you can imagine how much work it would take. Because even for people who don't have, like, again, necessarily violent models, to get people to a point of vulnerability is really challenging, like, pretty much no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that with people who are violent to the point of being like institutionalized in that way, I can't imagine what it's like to try and like break down that sort of barrier. Do you find that when you were working people like in that environment versus now you work in a private practice and like they've elected to come to you, do you feel a big difference between treating people like that?
So I can absolutely, you know, feel a difference in the sense that like if someone is mandated to treatment, a lot of times a therapist is doing more work than if someone is, you know, coming of their own volition.
Right.
That being said, people who are mandated to treatment, once they actually see the utility of it and they see like the purpose and that it could actually maybe help them a little bit, they can come around.
Yeah,
for sure. But it's definitely very different. You know, like when we think about like the area of addiction, I'm like now working with someone that's coming off of like a super high paying finance job that I'm seeing like after the 9 to 5. Whereas like, you know, in 2019, I was working with someone that was like in the shelter, and I was trying to help get an Obama phone and food stamps, right. But they are presenting with the same problem.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's so wild.
Addiction does not discriminate. Mental health difficulties does not discriminate.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so wild. Wow. It's just really nice to be able to provide that level of support regardless of what of the background that they've come from, and knowing that, like, it's in the in kind of the worst way, things like that are like the great equalizer between all of us.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those moments, excuse me, where it's important to really understand why, like, empathy and compassion for other people is literally what differentiates us from, like, most other species. Like, that is, like, the thing that makes us special. And you being able to do that in a way where you're like, I can actually lend you a hand and actually help you move through this process is really special.
Aww, thank you.
Have you had any, like, big wins that you can think of? We were talking earlier today about how you have a couple that, like, realized the guy in the couple realized, like, oh, I actually have been the asshole the whole time. And I think that's that has to feel very cool to be in the room, be like, oh my god, yes, you are the asshole. Oh my god.
It's cool to see people kind of start taking accountability for the role that they play in the problems that they're dealing with. I think that is absolutely cool. One thing, you know, like, I don't know, like, my job can be kind of thankless at times, just because, I don't know, you don't always think to, like, thank your therapist. It's like you tip your bartender, but, like, your therapist you're paying, you know, to help you. So. Yeah. Every once in a while, I get these, like, individuals that really express, like, gratitude, and it is so incredibly nice to hear.
Yeah.
To have someone tell you, like, you're the first person that they've, like, ever actually felt heard by, or that, like, their diagnosis is making sense. Mm-hmm. I've recently been, like, able to kind of correct diagnoses that a few of my clients have been kind of, like, followed by for a really long time, like, really intense diagnoses, especially, like, as related to trauma. Sometimes trauma can look like psychosis, and they're treated very differently, like, pharmacologically.
Yeah.
And if someone has, like, a label of some kind of psychotic disorder, they're going to be put on, like, really, really heavy shit by a psychiatrist, when in reality, like, that might not be what the actual problem is.
Right, right. And it could just be, you're saying, a trauma response.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's so interesting. Because then I would imagine handling something with a trauma response would be more of, like, a in-depth process of, like, okay, we're going to actually unravel what this is, and maybe, like, try and reimagine what the pathway is like of what you experienced to what you now are getting triggered by, and, like, that sort of thing. And instead they're getting treated with something like a medicine of some kind.
Yeah, absolutely. They're being told that they have something, that they're going to be on medication for the rest of their life, that they don't really know the cause of it, that they're just kind of stuck with it, and it's something that they're going to have to cope with. Whereas, like, PTSD, yeah, like, you can absolutely struggle with, like, trauma for a long time, but PTSD is something that you can reach a point where you don't meet criteria for it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say to someone who feels like they might fall into that category where they were, like, just diagnosed with some sort of psychiatric disorder, but in reality, you think, I don't know, might be something that they can maybe, like, walk themselves back from? Do you think just, like, getting a different therapist is helpful?
I think that fit in therapy is, like, so incredibly important, because there have been a lot of people that get matched with therapists that, like, just don't work for them, but they feel like it's too difficult to start over, or this person already knows them, but they hit, like, a plateau, or they feel like they're not really being heard by their therapist. And that's generally, like, a cue that it's a good time to switch.
Yeah. How should people be, like, breaking up with their therapist? Because people get very nervous about that. And in reality, I think, like, I'm sure there's some repercussions of, like, losing someone in your caseload, but in reality, I'm sure, like, you wouldn't do this job if your main goal was to, like, make a zillion dollars and have a full caseload constantly. Like, you're trying to help people. And like, I can't imagine you would feel, like, personal about someone saying,
oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, honestly, like, I can understand how those conversations are, like, really, really awkward to have. I actually have to have one with one of my doctors coming up soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I definitely, as a therapist personally, like, appreciate when someone tells me, like, that they're breaking up with me for therapy. Yeah. I guess to kind of, like, rewind a little bit, my approach in therapy, like, when I'm first having a session with someone, is that I let them know that I'm really receptive to feedback. Mm-hmm. So I want them to feel free to let me know if, like, something that I'm saying is not working or that they're confused with the direction that I'm taking them in, because mm-hmm. either I can provide rationale or we can, like, change course.
Yeah.
Because the last thing that I want to do is, like, waste someone's time and their money. If they're, like, the goal of therapy ultimately is to get out of therapy.
Yeah.
The only way that you're going to get out of therapy is if you got what you need from therapy.
Mm-hmm.
If I am thinking that I'm doing, like, a really, really, really great job and that person is just, like, I want to, like, smash my face into the wall, this is not helping, I'm the most depressed I've ever been.
Right.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
So I think even if it is an awkward conversation, like, these are those moments where you could consider yourself, like, quote unquote, selfish because you're putting yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's an awkward conversation, but at least, like, you can now move on from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw earlier this week, I was reading a study, and I'll send it to you because it was interesting. It was about the influence of a therapist's moral values on the way that they treat their clients. And of course, it was, like, particularly studied with the lens of, like, people who are religious versus people who are not. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but I think it's an important conversation to have with somebody that you, like, you should be interviewing your therapist as much as they're interviewing you when you first have your consultation, because that makes a big impact on the way that they treat people. Like, their perception of things is going to be really different, and that, not really different, but it'll be different. And that's okay, because there's going to be someone who's going to be a great fit for them, and that will be a helpful lens for them to have in their life. But there was, there was something interesting that was not religion related. That was, like, oh man, I can't really remember, but that study, it was geared, they talked a little bit about sexuality and the way that sex addiction is diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, for people who are, it was, like, men in high religious ideologies
mm-hmm.
were diagnosing sex addiction much more than other categories. And the category that was diagnosing it the least were women with less religious backgrounds, which I thought was really interesting. But then there's this, like, sort of, like, joke, I guess, around the groups of people that I hear talking about, like, sex addiction, and even, like, the psychologists and whatever that are in my like, school group and the mm-hmm. board, whatever, where they talk about how there are, for some psychologists, what they deem to be too much sex is more sex than they're having, because there's no way to, like, really and it's a joke.
Yeah.
But it's meant to be, like, because there's no real way to define what, like, too much really mm-hmm. is. Like, there's no number to really have. So it was an interesting, I'll send it to you because it.
Yeah.
It's mostly, like, the stuff in the middle, I was, like, kind of skimming through it. I was, like, oh, I feel like we know a lot of this. But if you look at the intro and you look at the results, it's pretty. But so you and I have talked a little bit about, like, sexuality now that I'm doing, like, the training that I'm doing mm-hmm. and the type of training that you did, obviously being a doctor. I'm training, it's just, like, a lot of school. but what was your, like, sexuality training like in all of your programs?
You mean, like, in terms of, like, sex addiction or just
like in general? Because the reason I'm asking is because, so, like, when I was looking for a therapist when I came off the show,
mm-hmm.
I specifically looked for a sex therapist
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to make sure that whoever it was that I spoke to understood enough of, like, the background I was coming from, because I wanted to minimize the chances I had of ending up with someone who, like, as I'm talking about wanting to do sex coaching and, like, having these conversations on social media and having this be, like, part of my job and my professional presence, I wanted to minimize the chance that person would be not really encouraging of that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm just gonna go and find a sex therapist.
Yeah.
I was very clear with her from the start. I was like, I don't necessarily need to talk to you about sex related things, but this training for you is important because it gives context for what I'm doing and whatever. And so there are people who reach out to me with things that, you know, are relationship related and sex related. And so as they're looking for therapists, it's sort of like you don't really know, because human beings are human beings. Mm-hmm. So you don't really know what background they have until you talk to them.
Yeah.
And your training is not specific to sex, but it's specific more to, or your specialty is specific more to addiction. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, because you have more of like a broad lens, what type of like sexuality training or information you got.
Yeah.
Through your whole process.
Of course. Okay. So when it comes to sexuality through the lens of addiction, like I try to actually stay away from the term sex addiction, mm-hmm. because it's like loaded. There's a lot of controversy around it. So I consider them more of like compulsive sexual behaviors. Mm-hmm. So that would be like someone who's in a monogamous relationship that can't seem to stop seeing sex workers, or can't mm-hmm. seem to stop, you know, visiting brothels.
Right.
Or it could be someone that is really, really into pornography to the point where they're watching for hours a day and it's taking away from like other activities. I think it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, like the quantity of sex, but yeah. when it comes to something that's like an addictive behavior, the most important like hallmark of addiction is that it causes that person distress. Mm. So, you know, if you're like happy as a clam having sex like 50 times a day, I don't know how you can do that, but like let's say like someone is doing that, that's not necessarily an addiction if they're in right. a happy, healthy relationship. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's not something that they like are like pushing or like forcing someone else to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's okay. But if someone is, you know, having sex 50 times a day, but they're forcing their partner, or it's just like because they're focusing on themselves only, then that might be, you know, problematic behavior.
Yeah. That was like, I did a reel recently after talking to a friend about like her relationship and whatever. And the reel was like, you're normal as long as what you're doing is you and your partner are happy with the arrangement that you have. If you never have sex or if you always have sex, like it doesn't actually matter. Like there's no rule. So it is like the thought of like too much sex is silly and mm-hmm. too little is also silly. Like if I can't tell you, one of the messages that I get the most is a woman reaching out to me saying, I just had insert really stressful life event, like getting a new job, getting fired from a job, having children. A lot of it is having children, mm-hmm. Moving to a new house, moving to a new city. And I just, you know, I haven't been wanting to have sex, and it's been like a couple of months and I feel bad. My partner's like really, you know, frustrated, and I just don't really know what to do. And I'm like, your brain and your body are trying to process mm-hmm. this huge, huge life change. And so it's sorting through everything that it can to make sure that you feel okay. Yep. And so putting yourself in a position where you feel especially emotional, especially vulnerable, and are experiencing this sort of like roller coaster of emotions and hormones is not going to be what your body wants to do.
Right, of course.
So you need to just like give it a second, just yep. give it some time. And so a lot of the times my advice to people in that circumstance is to give themselves a marked period of time where they're not going to even try. Like give it, tell your partner for the next two, even if you haven't had sex in 3 months, for mm-hmm. the next 2 weeks, I'm not going to even try. I'm not going to even think about it. And I promise you at the end of that 2 weeks, there will be at least some relief.
Yeah.
That will help encourage you to maybe feel like that's something you want to explore. But like, there's no way in stressful situations like that. There's no way.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, libido can change like on a moment by moment basis.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's hard like to talk about sex, I think, sometimes within like the context of a relationship, because mm-hmm. it has different meanings or different importance to like the people within the relationship. But I think that's absolutely reasonable to say like, hey, listen, like I'm going through a lot. Like I need to like, you know, put a pin in this mm-hmm. for a second.
Yeah.
Because if they're in a situation where they're constantly feeling like there's this pressure or this thing that they have to do, mm-hmm. then it's going to take the fun out of sex. It might make it feel like all the sex that they're having is coerced, and then mm-hmm. it's going to really damage the relationship. So,
yeah,
you know, it's better to kind of set that boundary, like this is off the table for a little bit while I process and kind of recuperate, than, you know, to potentially blow up the relationship by engaging in something that you're not fully on board with.
Yeah, and I like to use the word coerced because I think sometimes women especially will kind of give like this sort of pass because we're like, well, it's my like partner, it's like my boyfriend and they want to have sex and so whatever. But like in reality, what you're having is unconsensual sex. Like,
right.
This is not something that you are, consent is an excited, enthusiastic yes. And if so, if you're not doing that, then yeah, like that's not fully consensual.
Right.
And I'm happy that you used like coercion as the term there because it really is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's unfortunate that people feel so guilted in circumstances like that because you don't really owe anybody anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that circumstance or really in any. But yeah, like, there are interesting, like, ways to go about when you're in these really stressful situations. One of the things, have you read anything by Emily Nagoski yet?
I have not, actually.
Okay. She's great. And she talks about, like, the context of all of your sexual interactions, mm-hmm. too. And so one of the, like, ways that she puts it is, like, if you can think back to the best sex you've ever had, and it was like you were at a wedding, and that night you were in a hotel, and you had like a little bit to drink, but not that much. And you mm-hmm. had your favorite dress on. The amount of context that had to line up for that to be a situation where you emotionally and physically were in the perfect place, mm-hmm. versus you now living in a new house with a child, and you got thrown up on all day,
yeah.
and you're exhausted, like. The context is important. Like
yeah.
the context of all of your sexual activity is so important. And one of the things that she describes, and I've talked to people too about doing, is thinking back to a time where they had a really great sexual experience and really going through like everything you smelled and tasted and saw and felt physically and mentally that day, like all of the context that you experienced and what that laddered up to when you had this really great sexual experience that was like exemplary, then you can kind of take a step back and be like, okay, like, there's a lot of stuff that made that
work,
you know,
right.
And like there's, it can't be recreated all the time, but there are times where you can you know, ask for a sitter or take a little staycation and create a lot of that context on your own.
Yep.
And that can be really fun too. And there is also some like people get weird about scheduling sex.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like a whole, there are people who have very successful.
Oh yeah.
That have very successful scheduled mm-hmm. sex.
I recommend that for couples that I'm seeing that struggle with intimacy.
Mm-hmm. I think even like the anticipation.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the anticipation of like going on a date. Like if you go out with somebody and they're like, okay, great. Like it's Saturday. This is a great date. Let's go out next Friday. The anticipation.
It's true. That is true.
By the time I sit down at dinner, I'm sliding off the seat.
Oh man, I haven't had that experience in a long time. Not no shade to my boyfriend, but I would love like that, you know, like the excitement of like, oh, I'm gonna see them again in a week, not like, oh, he's gonna be like in my bed and I'm gonna have a hard time sleeping. I'm just kidding. I love you. No, I think I am. I've been told I am.
That's so funny.
He like doesn't really sleep.
What do you mean?
I don't know. He's really bad insomnia.
Oh,
but I'm not
no.
here to talk about my boyfriend's woes. Maybe his insomnia because I snore. Hopefully
oh,
not.
No.
Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I'm the asshole.
Maybe. Well, we were gonna do that's a perfect. That was a beautiful segue. Wow. Do you want to do a podcast professionally? Because I think you could. So we were going to look at some "Am I the Asshole" stories because I love when people do these on podcasts. I love Two Hot Takes, and they do this on some other podcasts too, and I feel like you'd be great for these, so I picked a few, and you can tell me which one you would like first. We'll see how many we want to do, but I'm going to read the title of the stories for you,
okay.
And you tell me what you think, okay? Am I the asshole for not wearing a bra around my cousin who's recovering from a porn addiction?
You're never an asshole for not wearing a bra. Next.
Problem solved.
Am I the asshole?
Oh my god. Am I the asshole for telling my girlfriend to fuck off for telling me not to watch porn? Am I the asshole for posting a relative's nudes in the family group chat?
Oh.
Am I the asshole for calling my brother-in-law for subscribing to my porn account? Which of these fall to you? You can look at them too.
Okay, so part of me feels like it would be maybe most helpful to do telling girlfriend to fuck off for the porn situation, but I'm very intrigued as to what the hell happened that someone's like relative's nudes were sent to like a family group chat.
Okay, let's do that one first.
Okay.
Kyle, 22 male, is a distant relative. He's actually my 19 female stepdad's cousin's kid. Wow, okay, that's a distant relative.
Yeah.
I've never really been around him much, though, just the odd family get-together. We hadn't seen each other in a while, but we did at a wedding a few months ago. He got drunk and kept hitting on me, saying how hot I was and how he'd love to get to know me better. I rolled my eyes and kept trying to get away from him, but he kept following me throughout the day. Gross. So someone gave him my number, and he kept on messaging me. I complained to my stepdad, who shrugged it off. Some people even thought it was cute or funny, which just encouraged him to act more outrageous. A few days later, he started sexting me and sending nudes. I sort of feel like
she's the one asking if she's an asshole?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Let's hear the rest of this. It sounds a little weird so far.
Yeah. What's worse was people who were at the wedding would tease me like it was some grand joke. About a month or two later, I finally had enough, and I sent everyone who had mocked me and then some nudes of Kyle. Family making fun of me and Kyle in the group chat. Kyle, the way this person typed this was so bizarre. Aunt who thought he would make a cute couple, Kyle nude. His parents who raised him to be this. Oh, okay. These are the people that she sent it to.
Okay.
So she says, family making fun of me and Kyle in the group chat, Kyle nude. Aunt who thought we would make a great couple, Kyle nude. His parents who had raised him to be this crappy person, Kyle nude. Plus lewd texts. My stepdad even received a printed picture on his pillow. Yikes.
I mean, I don't know about that one.
Yeah. Printed picture.
Yeah.
Amazing how many people I could find via group chats and various social media and others that I had phone numbers for. I had a few family members telling me how gross it was for sending nudes of Kyle and how I invaded his privacy, although the younger generation of cousins has taken to posting memes about him, such as when there's a family reunion, you can't decide which of your cousins to bang.
Oh my God.
Or edited versions of his pictures, such as a small leaf covering his bits. So that's the end of the story. They include a bunch of edits. So do you want me to read the edits first, like the additional information?
Sure.
So edited, tried to block him, but he keeps creating fake accounts and contacting me on different areas of social media. I've already told him off for hitting on me, only to receive a nude of him saying, bet if you had a taste, you would like it. I was just fed up with the mocking, the messages from people making fun of me, and him hitting me down. It was tiring. I began to dread the phone messaging sounds to the point where I turned the phone off and went around walking around for the rest of the day. Edit 2, yes, Kyle has stopped sending nudes. His cousins or my cousins found out about it and started making fun of him. His stepbrother changed his ringtone to Sweet Home Alabama. And his morning alarm to it saying, what are you doing, stepbro? Just to annoy him. Kyle did have a rant on my voicemail saying that I had ruined him and how much of a bitch I was. Edit 3, revenge porn is a thing where I live.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, because technically, I guess what she's doing is illegal. She's like sending his news to other people. So right. I guess that's what that is.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. It's weird because the overall vote is not the asshole, but I also feel like there's some context that's missing from here. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, obviously, like, that's kind of like a legal issue to like share someone else's pictures, but like, I don't know how to feel for her because it seems like she's like expressing like this guy is bothering me and everyone's like ignoring it.
Yeah.
And I guess like people do have to make some kind of like gesture if they really feel like they're like kind of backed into a corner. I don't know. I'm very on like the fence about this because I think that it's like not, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I don't know.
I feel like this person was inappropriate to begin with, but it would be very strange for someone to send nudes after they were already like rejected.
Right.
So I'm wondering if there's not that it, even if she was like just trying to be nice and she was neutral, or she in her mind she was being neutral, it feels like there's like extra context that we're missing
here. Yeah.
But even so, again, like unless it's an enthusiastic yes, like why are you sending nudes? Right. Why are you sending nudes?
Right.
But do I think she's an asshole for sending them in the group chat?
Questionable choice.
I think it's one of those moments where it's like, you don't want to, like, two wrongs don't make a right. And this right. person sending you unsolicited news doesn't mean that those people have to also
right.
receive unsolicited news, nudes. And it's yeah. like, not even for his sake.
Right. Sorry.
The things that are that these people are also receiving, like I'm sure like his aunt didn't want to see.
Oh, of course not. Yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
No one likes unsolicited nudes.
No.
I just don't know. I guess like maybe she felt like there really wasn't a better way to go about it.
Yeah.
She is 19. That's not like anything is wrong with, you know, being 19.
Yeah.
But I wonder if she was, you know, like 35, if she would do the same thing. Probably not.
Right. I'm looking at some of the comments, and some of them are like, not the asshole and you're a legend. And you know, not the asshole. Let's start with this. He was sexually harassing you and sending you unsolicited nudes. Yeah. But this person is saying you tried to make him stop and he didn't. Did she try to make him stop?
It seems it, maybe.
Did she tell the stepdad? I think she did.
Yeah, it said she told the stepdad and he like shrugged it off.
That's crazy.
Like, yeah, that's weird.
That's crazy. I feel like I missed that until I saw it in the comment. Okay, that's gross. Okay, now I changed my whole thing because I think it's weird to send the nudes, but also, what did she say about blocking? Tried to block. Oh, he keeps creating fake accounts.
Yeah.
Okay, then yeah, no, not the asshole. Because I don't know what I would do in that circumstance if I told his like relative, like his my stepdad, and he didn't say anything and just shrugged it off. I don't know what I would do either.
Part of me is thinking like screenshots of messages instead of
nudes,
because I think that like the nudes are a lot. Like you're right. Like his aunt, like she doesn't need to see his dick. You know.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's tough. But I'm gonna go with
I don't envy her.
I don't envy her at all, especially at 19.
Yeah.
I thought, what the fuck is the stepdad doing that you just like don't care?
Right.
That your stepdaughter is getting nudes, or your relative, I guess, cousins. What did she say? Cousins. Stepdad's cousin's kid. Just the odd family get together. That would be so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because that guy's like a stranger to her. No, not the asshole. I don't love that option. I think that she had better options, maybe. But no, I think
right. Sounds like she needed direct proof.
Yeah. Okay.
They're gonna get shrugged off.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. What is another one that you would want to try?
Okay. Yeah. Let's do the. Telling my girlfriend to fuck off for telling me to not watch porn.
Okay. All right. This one's a little shorter, too. Am I the asshole for telling my girlfriend to fuck off for telling me to not watch porn? I'm a 20 male in college and met my girlfriend October 2019. This was posted 3 years ago.
Okay.
My girlfriend is very beautiful and kind, but something she brought up early in the relationship is that she doesn't like that I watch porn several times a week. She told me it's really unhealthy for me and that she doesn't like me looking at other women like that or supporting such a degrading industry. She also told me that she doesn't like that I use a cam girl. I stopped with the cam girl, but I continued watching the porn because it's my body and my choice to masturbate, and it's not interfering with my everyday life. My girlfriend came over. We live in the same apartment building. She has to use my laptop because she didn't want to go back upstairs to get hers. I had porn open on my laptop, and she immediately got really upset. She said I lied to her about stopping. And in parentheses, she said, I told her I'd limit my use of porn, but honestly, I think I have every right to do what I want with my body. Then she started crying, telling me that I put porn and other women above her. We have sex a couple times a week, and she lost her virginity to me, so she's super attached and emotional when it comes to this stuff. Her crying really pissed me off, and I told her to fuck off and get out. She left and hasn't spoken to me since, or opened the door to her apartment since. My best friend, 21 male, told me that I'm an idiot for putting porn in other women before my own girlfriend. I told him to stay out of my business, and honestly, I think he's just simping. Am I the asshole? Edit, because I'm getting so much hate for burying it in the comments. I did lie to her about the porn. I said I'd stop, but I didn't. I just wish she'd stay out of it. The second edit, I went over to her place to apologize for screaming at her, and she broke up with me and gave me my stuff. My best friend said he didn't want to be friends with, quote, someone who's an abusive asshole that disrespects his girlfriend and friends, end quote. And yeah, I see my mistake now. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so his reaction doesn't seem to, like, match the situation. So I don't think that, like, him yelling at her and telling her to fuck off is, like, appropriate by any means.
Yeah.
Especially if he, like, kicks her out of the apartment. I mean, like, regardless of the circumstance, like, that is not cool to treat your partner like that. Especially if that was supposed to, like, 3 years ago. So they're probably together for 2 years at that point. I mean, in terms of, like, his actual consumption, like, he shouldn't have lied to her about, like, stopping. Like, limiting, like he said in the original body, like, absolutely. And, yeah, if she, you know, opens his laptop, there's porn up there. Like, okay, that doesn't necessarily mean he's watching it all day long.
Right.
It doesn't – I'm not necessarily getting the feel that he's really prioritizing that over his relationship.
Right, right.
It's not, like, the feel that I'm getting. I can see how it might be interpreted in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe his reaction was what – kind of signaled that that was what the case is, when really he sounds like he's, like, more defensive. So I don't necessarily think that he's an asshole for watching porn.
Yeah.
But for the way that he responded to the girlfriend, absolutely.
I agree 100% because I don't think that watching porn, unless it interferes with your everyday life, is an issue. And there are ways to go about it that are healthier than others. Like, there's, like, ethical porn, and that I think is a better influence than watching whatever mainstream. But if they had a conversation and he said he was going to watch less of it, and then he continued and she caught him, it's like, you could have at the very least been more careful.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you knew she was coming over. Like, if you're saying less and she doesn't really understand, like, she doesn't need to know, oh, you know, I just masturbated and I watched porn.
Right.
You know, like, if she's not monitoring it to that degree, then it's sort of, and it's at your own discretion, then, like, fine. And you can figure it out however you want to. But yeah, I agree. He's not an asshole for watching porn, but he is an asshole for the way that he handled it.
Yeah.
And he lied to her.
Yeah,
which is even worse. Yeah, that sounds like
he lied to us in the body of it. He's like, I said I would limit it, and then he's like, edit. Okay, I told her that I would stop. Okay,
exactly. That's so funny. So one of the comments that has the most upvotes on it is, you're the asshole. You literally just told an actual real life woman who wanted to be with you, with whom you could have actual real sex with, to fuck off and get out because you would rather masturbate by yourself to paid sex workers on screen.
That's making a big assumption. It's not like he kicked her out to masturbate.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah, I agree.
That's pretty big statement.
Yeah. They go on to say, your now ex broke it off and gave you back your stuff. Your best friend just told you to get lost. What do you need a chain clanking ghost to show you that what your future is going to be like?
Oh, damn. Okay. That's all mean. I think we need more context too, because, like, it seems like he probably did more for the best friend to just, like, peace out like that.
Oh,
you know?
Great. There's no way that all he did was was this interaction. And then his right. best friend is like, I can't be here anymore. Right. There's right. no way. And I think, like, even for her, it's possible that her values are that strong around and he posted twice, but that's someone responded to that and said, good, you got what you deserved, you're the asshole. But yeah, like, it just, there's definitely more context to this that we're not getting. And I think that he was an asshole in other ways that were not this.
Yeah.
Especially to have a reaction of telling her to fuck off. Because I think if I think it would be in circumstances like this, and in general, when people are uncomfortable with their partner watching porn, it's a larger conversation of, like, why does that make you uncomfortable?
Right.
And also, why do you feel like you need to watch it as often right. as you do? And, like, that conversation, we don't have that context here. And I would actually like to know, to be able to, like, to really get to the bottom of all of it.
Right.
Because
right.
even for her, like, she can't possibly know how often he's actually watching it. So it seems like for her, watching it in general, she wasn't comfortable yeah. with. Which, like, if that's her choice, but it would be interesting to know why she feels that way.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Her reasons are. But to tell her to fuck off and get out is really bizarre. Right. And then to have a friend who's apparently, like, one of your best friends to also be that into it is really strange.
Yes.
Very, very strange.
I agree.
Okay, let's do one more and then we'll wrap this bitch up. Should we do, calling out my brother-in-law for subscribing to my porn account, or?
Sure.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
That sounds juicy.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a long one. Strap in. Okay. Am I the asshole for calling out my brother-in-law for subscribing to my porn account? Burner account for obvious reasons. If any clarification is needed, I will be responsive in the comments. I, 29 female, have been married to my sweet husband, 33 male, for 2 years, and we've been together for 7 years in total. While my husband is not, his family is a very conservative Christian. They are very nice people outside of their beliefs, but he doesn't have much contact with them. Anyways, about 5 years ago, I started making certain kinds of content on certain kinds of platforms that do not line up with my in-laws' values. Mm-hmm. I make good money, and my husband and I live comfortably. I like the certain types of content on certain kinds
right,
of platforms.
Right.
My husband is completely supportive, but we don't want his family to know what I do because he doesn't want them to know. They also thought that I still worked in insurance. Also, I keep my personal social media separate from the accounts I make porn with, though it's not impossible to connect the two. Not too long ago, an account using my brother-in-law's name, Eric, and a username that he's used on many other social media accounts paid to subscribe to me on the site that I use to post adult content. I only noticed because I recognized the username when he liked a video I posted. I told my husband about this, and we obviously decided to block the account.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out to dinner with my husband's family, including Eric, his wife, and his newborn son, for Mother's Day yesterday. It was a nice get-together initially, but then Eric kept asking me how work was going and kept asking super specific details. He wouldn't leave me alone to the point that my father-in-law noticed and cracked a joke about it. I am still not sure what the point of asking me about the work was exactly, to make me lie, to embarrass me, to make me confess what I do, and to shock everyone. He had a look like he was trying to provoke me. I lost my patience at one BS question he had and said, "You seem like you really want everyone to know that I make porn." He started laughing and said that he didn't know what I meant by that. I said he had been fixating on what I do for work all night and that it was starting to piss me off because I had to block him and refund his money on the site he subscribed to. Anyway, my husband and I left early. My in-laws clearly don't approve of me now, and Eric and his wife are furious. Eric said that his family doesn't want to be around both my husband and myself until I apologize to him and his wife for wrongly accusing him of, quote, watching that filth. The thing is, I 100% believe that it was him, and I don't think that it's right that he tried to bully me over something that has nothing to do with him. I want to stand my ground on this, but I also feel bad because my husband is unwillingly in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the asshole?
That's tough. I want to say no, but it's hard because you don't know for sure if it was that guy. You know what I mean? I mean, it sounds like it probably was, and especially if she realized, like, he was, like, interrogating her. Like, and not only that, but the father-in-law recognized it.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me that she would say something, but maybe in that moment she wasn't necessarily thinking about, like, greater consequences for her direct relationship.
Well, they don't, she made it seem like they don't really see each other and keep in contact that much anyway, so it might have felt a little bit lower risk for her.
Right.
But I also, I would have felt like, okay, like, sometimes when you're sensitive to things, you are interpreting other people, like, asking questions, like, oh, they're interrogating me, and that might not be the case, but because her father-in-law was also like, what's going on here?
Right. That's the part that, like, stuck out to me.
Yeah. And for her to be, like, for the brother-in-law to be defensive enough and the wife to be defensive enough to be like, we're not talking to you anymore, and take such offense to the accusation,
right,
makes me feel like they know something.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think not the asshole also, because it's not like she said anything that was, like, A, not true, or B, felt very out of line for the amount of, like, weird attention the brother-in-law was
getting. Right.
The only thing is, like, the accusation, which, like, she can't really prove.
Right.
But still, I think not the asshole. It's so tough because in situations like this, people really want a black and white answer. In reality, like I would hope for something in the middle.
Exactly.
I would hope for something where it's like you didn't feel like you had to expose yourself to the degree of, like, ruining your relationships with your family, and, like, there would be a solution that didn't ruin everything for you in that family relationship.
Right.
But I think not the asshole.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah.
So long as, like, you know, her and her husband are able to kind of work through it, or work through the aftermath, and he's okay with, like, you know, how it ended up.
Yeah, I feel like he is, because he seems like he wasn't really super close with them to begin with anyway. But that's tough, and that's so weird. And, like, what a dick that the brother-in-law is, like, questioning her about everything at dinner.
Right.
At dinner in public. Like, it's not even
on Mother's Day.
On Mother's Day with your newborn son. Fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Not the asshole. She is not the asshole. That guy's the asshole. And it's tough because, like, we're only getting one side of the story.
Yeah.
But, like, if that is true, like, if everything that she's saying is true, it just sounds like this man was dealing with the consequences of his own actions.
Right. Like, I just got outed for subscribing to my sister-in-law's, like, OnlyFans.
Right, exactly. And I don't know why he would think he wouldn't get caught. It almost feels like, sorry, I was fighting that yawn. Like, when you get, like, one yawn.
Yep.
And you keep trying to fight it for so long. Anyway. It almost feels like he was, like, testing the boundary of that, and was just trying to see, like, what he could get away with, because he subscribed and got blocked, and then now they're in a public place and he's trying to push the boundary there.
Right.
It's like, what are you doing?
Right.
What is this for? And it's also, it's like, it's your brother's wife.
Right. Yeah. It's very weird.
It's so weird. Ew. Okay, I love those stories, though. Those fun. I'm glad we had a therapist to weigh in. A doctor to weigh in.
This is fun. I've never done a podcast before.
Oh my god, welcome. It's so fun, right? And it's, like, easy. It just feels like chatting. And before we go, I need to also, we know somebody who recently got through a bad breakup and had some of the most hilarious repercussions I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, we know that. Okay.
Could you please share
what some of these repercussions are?
And it's not that he did anything bad, but this is the first, like, real breakup that she's experienced. And so she's taking it and, you know.
Yes. Okay. So this person that Alyssa and I both know, He recently got out of a relationship. It didn't necessarily end on the best terms. His partner is very unfamiliar with breakups, and she seems to be having a difficult time kind of regulating her emotions around it. So our mutual friend received an anonymous book called How to Stop Lying that was delivered to his parents' house, where he does not live, but addressed to him. He was also signed up for Scientology.
I love it.
A gay men support group and personal favorite consultation for removal of testicles.
Iconic.
He had to call to cancel that consultation. You know, he's like really like not thrilled about this, like very, very anxious to check his emails. But I told him, I was like, one day this is going to be fucking hilarious. Yes. Dude. This is going to be so funny. I'm so happy this is not me. But you're going to laugh at this. Like, it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
But you know, and for someone that doesn't like, you know, calling doctors, like imagine having to like cancel that consultation.
Oh my God. Imagine having to call and be like, this was actually my ex-girlfriend who made this appointment. I feel like I would be in reception and be like, sure. I'm sure it was your ex-girlfriend. Oh God. I know that that's very stressful for him, but it's really iconic behavior, I fear, from her. That's really funny. And that these emails are coming through, like, in the middle of the night. So, yeah. Like, 3 a.m. and she's just, like, signing him up for all these things.
Yep. You know, she can't sleep. She's stewing, kind of pissed off about the breakup. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just sign him up for, like, this shit. This is going to be really annoying. Yeah, Scientology. That's probably going to be a hard one to get out of. He's probably going to get newsletters like forever.
That's the one that I think I would be most angry about because like that's a full-on cult.
That's true.
You know?
That is true.
Like, that makes me a little nervous. But, you know, he'll be okay. I think that's hilarious. And I think it's like really iconic. Oh my gosh. Thank you for coming on. Of course. This has been like long overdue. It's like a year overdue. And I'm so happy that you came on. And I would love to have you back and we could talk more about like therapist-y things.
Sure.
And this has been so fun and I just love you.
I love you.
I'm so proud of all the things that you've done. It's so crazy. When I think about like what, like where our friendship started and where we are now, it's just so weird. I feel like very grown when we like sit down and catch up because of like the drastic difference.
Yeah, we're like full on fucking adults in our 30s.
In our 30s.
Jesus.
Yuck. And when we're recording this, is actually like just 10 days before your birthday.
I know. I'll be 31 soon. I don't know if any of my patients know how old I am. Now they do. They watch this.
Wow. 31. Can't believe it. Wild. And we still look so hot. So crazy. So crazy of us, honestly.
I actually just met someone that told me that millennials age like shit. And then asked me how old I was, and I was like, I'm 30. And she's like, really?
Yeah, exactly. We age beautifully. They can fuck right off. We're the first generation to wear sunscreen our whole lives.
That's true.
Unbelievable.
Thank you so much for listening. As a reminder, we are always accepting questions about sex ed, about relationships, life advice. We will accept it all. We would love to hear from you. So send us an email to AlyssaExplainsItAllPod@gmail.com.